This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Construction began recently here in Chattanooga on the Ed Johnson Memorial at the Walnut Street Bridge. In 1906, Johnson, a 24-year-old African-American man, was lynched on that bridge. Work on the memorial now takes place in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd while in police custody in Minneapolis, and protests here in Chattanooga and across the country against police brutality. Mary Ann Martin is coordinator for the Ed Johnson Project. Jerome Meadows of Savannah, Georgia, is the artist and sculptor behind the memorial's design.
Mary Ann, Jerome, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Tell us where we stand now with moving forward on the Ed Johnson Memorial.
We're really excited to be at this point. A couple weeks ago, City Council signed contracts to approve the bids and the contracts to move forward on the memorial. It will be built in conjunction with the Walnut Plaza there in that same area. So we're really excited to be at this stage, and they broke ground on the memorial site. If people are walking past that site right now, it's going to look very different than it did a week ago. So we're really excited about that and moving forward throughout the summer and the fall to complete the project.
You have secured the funding that you need to pay for those contracts.
Yes, we are really grateful to the community and all our donors for providing just really unexpected and wonderful support to this project and fully funding it before we even broke ground. So we are really excited about that. Of course, with any construction project, it's always kind of fingers crossed when they start putting those shovels in the dirt. And especially with that area of Chattanooga, as everyone knows, it's right on a steep bank right there by the river and the bridge is there. So we're certainly crossing our fingers on construction costs. But as of this point, we are fully funded to complete the memorial, yes.
This work is taking place while we're all still very much living with COVID-19.
Yes, that is certainly the case. And with construction, that should not be a huge problem. Most construction crews have been able to adapt and move forward with construction. But as we think of even though bringing the community together for a groundbreaking or anything like that, we have to recognize where we are. So we're looking at possibly doing a virtual groundbreaking event, or as we talk about the dedication, you know, everything is always put in parentheses around the COVID-19 regulations and what we might need to do around that.
We're looking at a dedication early next year?
Completion is slated for February of 2021 with, yes, a dedication hoping to be on the memorial of the anniversary of Ed Johnson's lynching, which is March the 19th.
And Jerome, how did you become involved in this project?
Well, through the usual sources, venues that I utilize to find out about various public art projects that are happening throughout the country, throughout the world, actually. So I saw a call for entry for this particular project. And of course, it really struck my interest. I've done other projects that deal with revealing aspects of African-American culture that have been overlooked. And so this was something that I was very interested in. And so I sent in my initial materials and was delighted to be shortlisted. There were three teams. I put together a team based on local resources and local strengths and came up with a proposal that won the commission.
Talk to us a little bit about the design itself and the many, many things you brought to the table in that design. So when people do visit this memorial, it tells the story not only of Ed Johnson, it tells the story of Chattanooga at that time, and it says something about how Chattanooga sees itself today and going forward.
But at the heart of it is the fact that, again, this is an aspect of African-American culture and history, in this case, that had been overlooked and buried for now 114 years. Yet another African-American male falsely accused and basically murdered. But then the more I learned about the story in terms of Ed Johnson's life and the unprecedented occurrences that took place by way of his two lawyers coming forth and doing all that they could to defend him, in light of the fact that that same mob mentality that murdered Ed Johnson was something that they put themselves at risk of facing that wrath as well. So in terms of superheroes, these two individuals are classic models for actual superheroes. But the reason for bringing all of this information forward is first and foremost to reveal a historical occurrence, but also in terms of race relations and the fact that America is still grappling with this as we see now in our current environment. The idea was to create a place where people could gather, people of all races, all ages, all backgrounds, and consider the story as a springboard for how do we deal with getting beyond these tragedies. Remembrance, reconciliation, unity. And so the circle seemed to be a proper facial context in which to undertake that objective. And the three figures of Ed Johnson and Noah Pardon and Stiles Hutchins stand in the center of that. They are the heart of the memorial. We have story walls, which will convey various aspects of the story. Obviously, there's more to the story than we could put forth in these four story walls, but salient points that people who are visiting the site should be made aware of. And then ideally, people are then there to approach one another around the subject and have that conversation, which is so sorely needed.
What were some of your inspirations in drafting this design? There have been many other projects like this that have been brought to fruition. You may have been involved on some of those. Tell me more about what was sort of your creative compass in this.
Besides from the symbolic purpose of the circle itself, the utilization of human figures, in this case cast in bronze for durability and just the nobility of the bronze material, but that these figures, unlike a lot of, and I have to say this, unlike a lot of the statues, particularly Confederate statues and such that we have up on high on pedestals, they're removed. These three figures are on ground level, with the idea that you will be able to approach them as human beings, even though they're heroic, and interact with them in a more intimate manner. I like working with the figure, but then there are additional three more abstracted forms that occupy the portion of the slope leading down to the river. And those figures are, if you can imagine, there's a network of branches. They stand about 9 feet tall, and in the center of that network is a negative outline of a human figure. And those three figures, it just seemed that if we're, to the extent that we're acknowledging Ed Johnson's murder by lynching, that we should acknowledge and also pay honor to the other three individuals who were lynched in Chattanooga around that same time. In fact, Alfred Blunt was lynched on the same bridge 13 years prior to Ed Johnson. Design-wise, and as a sculptor in a public context, I like to present symbols and images that have a direct connection with the average person. Representational figures, life-size figures can accomplish that. But I also like to present elements that are a bit more, I don't know if challenging would be the word, or inspiring in terms of other aspects, other ways in which creativity and sculptural forms can engage and inspire the viewer.
You talked about symbolism. There's a symbolism in moving forward with building this memorial at a time where, yet again, grappling with race, the legacy of race, issues such as police brutality are front and center yet again. You mentioned a little while ago the Confederate monuments. There's a symbolism to building the Ed Johnson Memorial now in 2020 going into 2021 as we're grappling with all of these things yet again.
Very well put. I'd like to hear Mary Ann's thoughts on that. Yeah, very well put.
Jerome, you're going to have to go after me, though, because I want to hear your response on this as well, because you have so much insight on this.
Oh, okay.
I think it is a moment in which Chattanooga finds itself, and I know those of us working on this hope that it can become a symbol for what Chattanooga wants to be in this very difficult time. It's certainly something that we talk about as a committee and trying to think about how we can take this memorial and have it serve in the community as a symbol of something better and to learn from this history, because sometimes it does seem, you know, 114 years later, we still have Black men being killed by those in power. It's a slightly different structure than how Ed Johnson was killed, but when you boil it down to the fact that it is still a Black person being killed by the people who are in power, I think it's just a call for the entire community to take a really hard look at who we are and what we want to be and how we can make this a story that does not keep on repeating itself in all of our communities.
There's certainly a lot to be said on this, but it just seems to me that we reinforce the understanding of why and how to say no to something by having a forceful way of saying yes. And to the extent that we're saying no to glorifying the heroes, the symbols of oppression and racism, yeah, what's going on politically in terms of rallies and things of that nature is forceful. But there's a reason why these monuments were created in terms of the power that they hold by way of impacting and impressing and affecting a community. And so conversely, yeah, tearing them down or not, we need to be about creating those monuments that speak to those positive aspects, those stories that have been overlooked. Again, and the Ed Johnson Memorial is a classic example of this. And to whatever extent it's coincidence or divine intervention or Ed Johnson himself, the timing of this is just profoundly important.
And where can people go online to find out more about the memorial and to follow the progress and all the rest?
Our website is edjohnsonproject.com. You can also follow us on Facebook. Go on Facebook and search for Ed Johnson Project and our page should pop up. We will be providing updates, particularly on the Facebook page about that. If you want to shoot us an email, we can add you to our email list. We send out regular email updates as well. That email is edjohnsonproject@gmail.com. But also, we are going to be making some announcements in the community as we move forward about the dedication and events surrounding that. We are having conversations with various foundations and groups in Chattanooga. We want this to be something powerful. We're looking at a series of events leading up to the actual dedication and possibly afterwards. So a lot of exciting things surrounding that and the larger, as we talked about, the larger context of what's going on in the world in Chattanooga. We want this memorial and this dedication that, well, it's something that speaks to us in the present day and to our community. So that's how we're trying to frame as we plan these events.
All right. Mary Ann, Jerome, thanks so much.
Well, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Tomorrow is Juneteenth, commemorating the end of slavery in the United States after the Civil War. Josiah Golson is an artist, lawyer, and writer here in Chattanooga who founded the 800 Collective, a diverse group of artists who use their art to spark civic engagement. Tomorrow, at noon on Facebook and at 1 p.m. on Instagram, he will read his work, The Souls of Free Folk.
Josiah, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You'll be reading on live stream, not right. Once, but twice tomorrow, right. The Souls of Free Folk. For people who don't know a lot about it, tell us more.
The Souls of Free Folk is basically an illustrated book of a narrative poem that I published with Polyphemus Press, a local publisher, in 2018. And the title is inspired by The Souls of Black Folk by W.B. Du Bois that came out over 100 years ago. It was a collection of 14 essays speaking to what Du Bois articulated as the problem of the color line and all of the issues and struggles that Black folks were going through at that time of his research in the late 19th and early 20th century. So what The Souls of Free Folk is basically like a love letter to all of the work and bravery and passion and brilliance of Du Bois, individuals like Ida B. Wells, writers like James Baldwin and Lorraine Hansberry, musicians like Nina Simone, all of these forces of Black creativity that have found their work at the intersection of art and activism.
And these are touchstones again and again and again, whether in the best of times or in the times that we unfortunately have seen yet again.
Indeed.
In the past month.
Indeed, absolutely. It's kind of a like that best of times and worst of times phrase is especially poignant at this time because you see in the midst of this ongoing struggle, like incredible voices emerge and innovative practices and ideas and changes that the people are taking into their own agency. But the fact that it's still necessary, the fact that people are still in a large part of the population is just now realizing what's been going on for all this time, it's painful, but at least there's critical work being done.
Does a series of events, as we have seen in the past month, reframe how you're going to read a work like this, how you approach a work like this? It's a work that can be approached from many different angles, many different ways.
That's a really good question. And what's really interesting is that when I started working on the book in 2016, finished it like right at the end of 2017, and then put it out in 2018. And the book uses the metaphor of illness to speak to systematic racism. So one individual, the protagonist, kind of recognizes they're not well. And then they see that there's almost like a collective illness. And so now, thinking about this story in the context of this awakening and also in the midst of a global pandemic is really just very strange for me. And so given that and the social distancing, when I first presented the book at AVA in 2018 at the book launch, like I kind of performed it with this art piece that I was making as I was reading. So now reading it with social distancing and making sure people can receive the story, but at a safe distance, I am exploring like ways where I can share the visuals of the book in real time in a way that can be very interactive and can really put those pictures in people's minds and hopefully like let it sit with them as I read the story.
Now, when we talk about the visuals, describe for the audience what we mean and how those visuals accompany or are accompanied by the text.
Every page in the book has a specific illustration. There are about like 120 illustrations. And I think very much like as an artist, like when I started seriously trying to work as an artist over a decade ago, I was very much inspired by like trying to create narrative scenes while adding my own words or my own lyrics, or even taking the lyrics or poetry of other writers and then while crediting them, creating a complementary illustration to it. I feel like this book is kind of a blending of the inspiration of like Jacob Lawrence and then William Blake, who of course like had the paintings along with his poetry. As you go through the story, there's text at the bottom with the illustration or the image above. And so you're able to kind of follow it like a picture book for young adults and adults. And so it's always been interesting how people will engage with both and how they find their way from one element of the story to the other. What on one page, it may be the text that resonates, and on another page, it may be the image and or both.
The narrative of events in the past month may not be new, but at least for this moment in time, beyond the African-American community, the perception of that narrative, whether it lasts for a moment or lasts for longer than a moment, the perception beyond the community of that narrative has shifted. What are you thinking about? What are you hearing from people in the community at this time?
I feel like more than ever, particularly in my lifetime, beyond like the communities that have regularly engaged this, people are having to sit with it in a new way and in a new energy, particularly the energy. I think from what I've communicated, from what's been communicated with me and with peers or colleagues and friends, is that the moment that we're in presents a real opportunity for us to understand that the work we have to do in this inquiry that we have to have and have honestly and with ourselves and collectively is something that is lifelong work. And I'm glad you spoke to like that issue, like that element of the moment and how to permeate or go through the moment and then even pass like a movement of sorts to really think of like the issues we deal with as humans are lifelong issues, and we get better with age and we get better with work. Racism is one of those things where it can't be identified as like, oh, it's one thing we'll, you know, I or eventually will like just get through. We get better and we get better, and there's no status quo to it. And there's a great deal of catching up and desperate work that needs to be done. But understanding that, I feel, and really feeling that internally is a great part of the battle that we all have.
And part of that, I would imagine, is this work that you wrote a few years ago, that you put together a few years ago, telling it for Juneteenth and telling it for this particular Juneteenth.
Heard. Absolutely. Timing is always, it's just really like fascinating, overwhelming, and humbling. I've like celebrated parts of the book before in the past couple of years since it's been out. And now this moment particularly is just, it celebrates the work of protest. It celebrates the work of voices being spoken. It celebrates not only survival, but thriving and what that can look like and celebration. And so it's really humbling to have an opportunity, even with the limitations of us sharing space, it's humbling to have an opportunity where I can add to the language, a hopeful and healing language of this moment.
And where can people go online to catch it all?
For information, visit my site at josiahgolson.com. For the noon reading, you can be on Facebook and find me at Josiah Golson. And then for the 1 p.m. reading, Eastern Standard Time, also on Instagram, just find me at Josiah Golson. You can follow Josiah Golson.
All right, Josiah, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Another virtual celebration of Juneteenth tomorrow comes from our campus, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. The Speak Out for Freedom video screening begins at 5 p.m. on Zoom, featuring African-American students, faculty, and staff. Chris Stokes is UTC's Assistant Director of Multicultural Affairs.
Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ray, for having me today.
Tell us more about this event tomorrow.
We want to make sure that we're capturing a part of American history. It's celebrating Juneteenth, which is known internationally as African American Emancipation Day, which was June the 19th, 1865, to be exact. And that date holds a lot of significance because it was when those who were in Galveston, Texas, those who were enslaved, finally were made aware of the news brought to them by the Union troops and that they were freed as well. And so that celebration has gone on since the late 1860s. And so it's an opportunity for us to look at that history that was made there, because it's not just African-American history. It's American history. It's a part of our story. It's a part of our nation's narrative. And it's so telling now because of so many opportunities to still continue to grow. We have opportunities to celebrate the legislation that was changed there. And as you see in history, it took a little bit of time for that news to come through and everybody else to be aware of that. So we want to make sure that we're telling a true story of our history, but also celebrating the efforts that were made to get us to a better place.
So this event features the Speak Out for Freedom commemorative video, which will be pulling many voices together. Tell us more about the voices in this video.
The voices in the video are going to be those of our students and colleagues here at the university, giving them an opportunity to share their stories. A big part of the African-American tradition as a part of our nation's tradition, period, is storytelling. Each generation, we get a chance to hear those stories, and we get to hear those stories that our friends and peers and colleagues have experienced so that we can hear about the continued challenges that we have to overcome. We've come a long way in our country, but we've got a lot of ground to cover, and we want to make sure that we're able to support our colleagues and our students and give them a space to share their stories so that we can support them. And it's a great opportunity for us as a university and as a campus to come together to embrace one another. This is a chance for us to unite under a common banner, and it's change. We want to see progress, and we want to support those that we're close to. And so we want to make sure that those that are part of the campus are heard. And we want to make sure that they know that they've got allies and are supported. So we want to create that opportunity for those voices to be heard and also for allies to come and support and share in the stories as well. No greater story than a narrative of unity. Those who have been impacted by a trauma and those who are there to support them in the trauma. What better way to celebrate a day of freedom than that way? Pulling people together from both backgrounds.
This video tomorrow, the Speak Out for Freedom commemorative video, it's the first of what you are calling the Freedom Series. Tell us more about that.
The Freedom Series is just that. It's three parts to discuss the impact of freedom in our lives, you know, to educate so we can all be educated on the impact of freedom, so we can be unified in that, and also that we can all be empowered to make those changes and support freedom in the lives of all. And so we look to have opportunities, different events throughout the course of the academic year to pull people together for us to share in those freedom stories and in those narratives that can help pull us together. And in the midst of a time where it could cause so much division, we want to create a space where we can all come together for a common goal for change.
And where can people go online to follow all this, not only tomorrow, but the rest of the series as it unfolds?
We're still planning in the midst of COVID-19, so we're trying to make sure that we've got flexibility in our scheduling, but we want to make sure that, you know, you can follow us on our social media at UTC, UTC_MCC. And this is not just a single effort from our office. It's a collaborative effort from several different entities, namely the Office of Equity and Inclusion, the Office of Multicultural Affairs, and the Center for Women and Gender Equity. The celebration of freedom, Juneteenth, is a part of American history, and we want to show that we're all supportive and as allies to make sure that we're giving credence to the event, making sure that our campus is part of celebrating culture, various cultures, and being inclusive in our offerings from our departments. So we want to make sure that we have a full team there. And like I said, it's an opportunity to celebrate history, not just African-American history, but a part of our American history, and a chance for us to come together as those who have embraced tragedy and trauma and those who can embrace as allies as well.
All right, Chris, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for having us.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Back in March, the Chattanooga City Council designated Juneteenth as a day of commemoration known as Juneteenth Independence Day. Tomorrow evening, 155 red, black, and green Pan-African flags will be posted along the Walnut Street Bridge, the number representing each year since emancipation after the end of the Civil War in 1865. Flag bearers, following the guidelines for COVID-19, will begin gathering around 6:30 p.m. for a prayer walk that will run from the north end to the south end of the bridge. Rick Morris is founder and CEO of the Chattanooga Festival of Black Arts and Ideas.
Rick, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This time last year, we were at WUTC in our studio.
Yes.
And we were talking about the festival, Black Arts and Ideas. Things are different this year in terms of holding an event.
Right.
Tell us what's going on.
You're absolutely right. So much has changed in a year in terms of how we were celebrating Juneteenth. It was a 7-day-long festival with music, dance, and lots of recognition of our local Black artists and a way to really celebrate and commemorate Juneteenth. This year, we did a couple of different things earlier virtually. I've had a couple of commercials that were produced that we've been airing on television that tries to educate people about Juneteenth and what it's all about. Tuesday, we did a virtual gallery tour of two of our local Black artists. They just started the gallery a little less than a year ago. And so we went through, looked at their work, and they were able to talk to us about it. And that was fantastic as part of the Black Arts and Ideas Festival to have that virtually. Who would have anticipated that we would be in week number 3 of protests happening, protests of the murder of George Floyd? So that caused me to step back even further to kind of figure out what would we need to do to recognize and participate in that energy that's going on. So part of what will happen is that we are going to put on display across the Walnut Street Bridge a red, black, and green flag, which is the Pan-Africanism flag that stands for global solidarity in the Black community. And it's been a symbol that I've used for the Black Arts Festival as well as for Juneteenth. And so we're using that, and that's going to be in itself a huge statement. But we're doing it in protest and in solidarity with the other things that have been going on, not just in Chattanooga, but all over the world. And so that's how we are going to be commemorating Juneteenth tomorrow, is through that display. So we've asked people to come and hold the flag, as well as the city has adopted Juneteenth as a recognized holiday in Chattanooga. And so, again, yet another triumph for us that happened March the 31st, but, you know, not able to fully celebrate it the way it deserves, but looking forward to doing that next year. But that's part of what will happen. It sounds very simple, but I think it will be very powerful, particularly with the display of the flag and with other participants marching from Miller Park to Coolidge Park across the Walnut Street Bridge and kind of gathering in solidarity there in Coolidge Park for a very brief reading of a portion of the Emancipation Proclamation. We'll be reading some of the names of some of those who've been victims of police brutality, as well as singing a verse of the Negro National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. So very simple, but hopefully very impactful.
The choice of the bridge. There's
yes.
symbolism at the heart of that, too. We have to talk about that.
We do. They've already started some construction, actually, on that on the south side of the bridge for the Ed Johnson Memorial. So that's happening as well, and that'll be very obvious for people going across the bridge because it's blocked off. The Walnut Street Bridge has become, it's always been iconic for the city, but now it really is just becoming this symbol of so many different movements. Earlier in the year, I did something with placemaking where we did the history of Chattanooga across the bridge, bridge through time. And so now coming back to do this, and then I really anticipate utilizing it even more throughout the year for different events that we'll be commemorating or celebrating or bringing attention to.
You have a lot going on. You always do.
Not so much this year, though. I mean, it's just the quarantine since March the 13th, not as much with that festival was a lot. But yeah, it's been very different for me over the last few months.
You've had the opportunity to reflect over the past few months, even before what happened to George Floyd.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of reflecting all over the place since. As somebody who grew up here, as somebody who is a creative, as a Black man, what are you thinking about at this time? What are you hearing from people at this time?
We have these, you know, whenever we come in contact with somebody we hadn't seen, the first thing is, how are you? In my mind, I have to think, do I tell the truth or do I give the expected response, oh, I'm fine, kind of a deal. And lately I've not been able to give that response. I am emotionally in distress, which also causes physical distress. I mean, every minute of the day, you're bombarded with the news, you're bombarded with happening in the world, with the injustices, with shootings and deaths. But even before that, I try to tell people, every day I get up before I walk out of the door, I have to think to myself, how am I going to navigate getting from point A to point B as a Black man in Chattanooga, in Tennessee, in the United States, in the world? Because it is a constant thing for me and for so many Black Americans. I told someone the other day, I said, I know I have all of my tags, my headlights, everything works. But as soon as I see a blue light, my heart goes into palpitations. Because I have no idea. I mean, I rolled up in Walmart's parking lot, and they have the blue lights flashing on the carriers, and I panicked. I mean, my heart jumps into my throat because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, am I going to survive this immediately? That's the first thing in my mind every time, every single time. And if that happens on a daily basis, it just wears on your emotions, your psyche, your physically. You know, you don't sleep well. It's traumatic stress syndrome. It really is every single day. So that's a long answer, but a truthful one in terms of how I'm doing. That's, you know.
Well, I appreciate the candor. And I think the people who listen to our show and have heard you on our show in the past would appreciate that too. Where can people go online to find out more about what's going on tomorrow?
Well, they can go to our Facebook page, which is Chattanooga Festival of Black Arts and Ideas on Facebook. Then our website is blackartsandideasfest.com, blackartsandideasfest.com, all spelled out. And there's information there.
All right. Rick, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Ray, for having me. Thank you for thinking about this and helping us in your ways to celebrate so many triumphs for Juneteenth happening.
Roe Anderson, born and raised here in Chattanooga, is the founder of Girl Stance, a nonprofit that teaches yoga to young Black girls. On Saturday, she'll be co-hosting a pop-up yoga with Madia Swycord, following the COVID-19 guidelines, at Riverfront Park, starting at 9 a.m.
Ro, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Same here, even when we're talking about tough stuff. And we've got some tough stuff to talk about, and you've been thinking a lot about lately. Tell me what's on your mind.
Oh, it's a lot. It's a lot on my mind in these moments, in these days. Just what's going on, you know, in the community and how it's affecting everyone and our kids, most importantly. You know, what are they making of what's happening in front of them, right? That's one of my biggest concerns. And just truly for myself, trying to interpret things in the best way and doing what I can to help others move through this time, you know, in a positive way.
And you mentioned to me before this conversation, you were flashing back a few years to how you first got involved in the community in the way that you are now, seeing some of the coverage now, some of the things that are being put forward that should be done in the community.
So it's so interesting. You know, like I shared with you, my first initiative in the community was a project that intentionally was to bridge the gap between the police department and the inner city youth. Because at that time, I believe there was a shooting. Can't remember which one it was. I'm not sure if it was the Trayvon Martin one or the one after that. But there was a lot of tension at that time, you know, rising up in the community. Not as much as it is now, but definitely a lot of tension. And my instincts was just like, you know what, all cops aren't that way. All cops aren't bad, you know, but I also had the balanced experience of witnessing, you know, injustice in the community and racism and prejudiceness amongst my siblings. So I wanted to do something about that. You know, I'm always a solution-driven person. So I went out and I applied for a challenge with Causeway. I received a grant for about $3,000 or $4,000 to initiate and execute the project. And we put together such a program that where we had cops, firefighters, and community interacting with kids in a fun way, and just a playful way, because I truly believe that playing and engaging with people, whether it be by music or food, is just really the true solution and the cure to a lot of the things that we face when it comes to what we perceive of one another and what we project out to each other. So yeah, back in 2013, I initiated Play Police Leadership and Youth, and we got those kids out to play some flag football and had a field day event. And the kids were just very shocked at first. They were shocked. It was like, what are the police doing out here? They don't do this. And then they opened up, and it was just such a great experience. Flashing back on that, I'm thinking like, wow, that would be such a great thing to maybe start up again, or just something that could have really maybe expand in such a way we can prevent what's happening right now, you know?
What are your thoughts about the dialogue, where there is dialogue between the city, the police department, and the community, especially with the protests continuing day after day?
Yeah, right. It's a lot. Like I said, I have a lot of opinions and thoughts. And I always try to come from a balanced perspective, being fair to both sides. You know, I truly understand the emotions of the society, you know, of citizens. I truly get it. Like I said, I grew up in such an environment where I've seen injustice, racism, and prejudiceness against my family and myself often. So I get it. You know, I get the emotions, and I think they're fair to have. And I think there should be a solution. I think there needs to be policies in place that prevent certain emotional, you know, prejudiceness and actions to occur. And then I also see where, you know, we can take the accountability of our own emotions as well. You know, what we perceive police and people of authority to be. With me teaching yoga and teaching how to balance emotions and going through my own experiences, I think it's truly important for us to utilize this time, this energy that we're feeling, these emotions, in a productive way. Whether that be creating more programs, creating solutions to where we can stop this and we can bring forth unity. So that's where I stand with it. I'm very much, like I said, a solution-driven person. And that's where I focus in on. But like I said, I understand and I get both sides. And I see it and I respect all. And I stand with both. I don't feel that I want to pick sides right now, if that makes sense.
One of your initiatives is Girl Stance, teaching yoga to young Black girls, and you've had to adjust as a result of COVID-19. What are you hearing from the girls now? What are you telling the girls now?
Yeah, some of the girls have expressed their emotions towards it. You know, some of them are sad. You know, they're grieving and they're feeling a lot of distress due to the, you know, situation and what's happening in the economy. And where we stand in this and supporting the girls, like I mentioned earlier, we truly want to guide their perspective in this moment and let them see that, yes, these things are something you should be aware of. However, we don't want to harbor these emotions to where it stifles us or it shrinks us or it makes us feel inferior. That's not what we're aiming to do here. So, you know, what we're guiding them in this moment is just to truly utilize what they're feeling to be creative, utilize what they're feeling to serve their community, to bring happiness, you know, and bring peace in some kind of way. Get creative. What is it that you want to do for your community that can lighten the load right now, emotionally, physically, economically, whatever it may be? So we're really encouraging them to seek those opportunities and to talk to us more about it so we can support them in whatever it is they want to do. So it's actually been a great experience getting closer to them in that way.
Last time we talked about your son and mm-hmm. the approach that you have been taking in raising him.
Yeah.
What are you hearing from him at this time? What are you thinking about as a mom? Because this story, it's a national story. It's a Chattanooga story, but it's a life story. And yeah. What are you hearing from him now?
Yeah, Ray, it's interesting. I giggle because my son is such a free spirit. Okay, I don't think he's not like other kids, okay? I'm just going to say that. He doesn't let things bother him, you know, and he truly amazes me often when things like this happen. And, you know, as humans or adults, I would say, we get all in our emotions and all flustered. And here's this kid just like, yeah, you know, I don't think I want to feel like that. I think I want to change, you know, I think I want to change something. I think I want to make things better for people. So I think he gets that from me, but he's just so unbothered, I would say, about a lot of things. And I've had conversations with them, and, you know, it brings up a very touchy topic about if racism exists with him. And, you know, a lot of people, they'll give you flack about that. You know, if you say racism doesn't exist in their world, and, you know, and for my son, I truly believe it doesn't for him. And of course he's young, you know, he hasn't experienced a lot of things that we have experienced as adults and culturally, but he doesn't know what racism feels like or looks like or any of those things because he's been exposed to so many cultural differences and experiences. And he just truly is a lover and he wants everyone to come together and be peaceful. He wants to get back out and play with his friends of all colors. He wants to have fun. He just wants to be a kid, Ray. That's truly it. And that's what he's telling me. He's like, Mom, when is this going to be over so I can be a kid again? And that's just, you know, that just warms my little heart.
Tell us what you will be doing on Saturday.
So on Saturday, we're having a pop-up yoga event. I know a lot of my students and people that join me in my yoga sessions have missed me. They've been asking me to do yoga. And we're doing a pop-up yoga called Justice and Peace, Find Your Peaceful Warrior. So the pop-up yoga event is really geared towards a peaceful protest and allowing people to kind of move that energy out, you know, move out those emotions that we've been holding in and harboring for the last few months, you know, definitely with the COVID situation and now what's going on nationally. We want to just make space for people to release that, find a way to maybe even balance it if they're not ready to release, but maybe just integration and finding a way to just move more productively throughout these days so we don't harbor it. Because I can imagine a lot of people agreeing that these days have been very heavy emotionally, whether you're out protesting or not, you can feel the energy of everyone around. So we're offering that this Saturday at 9 a.m. at the Riverfront Park. So that is the location where they usually host the River Band on the steps. And you can just come out. It's free. It will be at 9 a.m. And we just hope to bring together a nice crowd. We're going to honor the COVID restrictions and everything and give people space. But we definitely want to give people some laughs, some movements, and some release on Saturday. So if you're listening, come on out. You're welcome.
And where can people go online to follow everything that you do?
So you can go to Girl Stance on Facebook. That's GIRLSTNCE. And you can go to our website as well, which is www.girlstance.org. We're also on Instagram at Girl Stance Cha. So that's GirlStanceCha. And for the pop-up yoga information, you can go to my yoga page, which is Ro Lashay Yoga. That's R-O-E as in Ro, and Lashay, L-A-S-H-A-Y, Yoga. If you go there, you'll find all the links to the adult events and then our Girl Stance. You can support, donate, help us bring relaxation, revitalization, and empowerment to our young Black girls in the community.
All right. Ro, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Saturday is World Refugee Day. This year, Bridge Refugee Services Chattanooga will hold a virtual celebration called World Refugee Day, Together at Home. It starts at noon on Facebook and YouTube, featuring stories from refugees, language lessons, fashion, and music. Marina Peshterianu is Associate Director of Bridge Refugee Services Chattanooga.
We had a great venue for this year as well and planned wonderful events. We're not giving up. We will do it virtually. We will stream live on Facebook and on YouTube. This is first for us. We had a lot of firsts, all of us as a community. And I want to ask you to come and support and be there with us. I think that our community proved so many times that we are strong together, celebrating refugees, celebrating our diversity, celebrating our commitment to human rights, and it's very important. Every year we have a theme, and this year it's Together at Home. You'll have a chance to experience our diversity. You would have a chance to learn about contributions that refugees make. You will hear client stories, you'll have language lessons, you will have presentations, cooking presentations, music, fashion, and of course, we hope that we will dance all together, everybody at home in a comfortable environment. We are really excited about it.
Beth and Becky Hetzel are sisters who own a working art studio and gallery in Cleveland, Tennessee. On Saturday, they will hold a grand reopening at their new location on Main Street. Works by more than 20 artists will be on display, all to benefit Hetzel Art Studio and Gallery.
Beth, Becky, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So tell us about the reopening.
The reopening, we moved over from 25th Street. We opened in February last year there. We quickly outgrew. It was a smaller gallery, and we just moved to a bigger place here on Inman Street. It was kind of weird reopening in the middle of a pandemic, but we took the chance. We had a lot of support from friends, family, patrons, so we made the move. We had to approach the opening a little differently, of course, with spacing, social distancing. Yeah, so we decided to do a RSVP benefit art show, so that way people have to make reservations and we can keep a head count of under 40 people with 4 different show times on the same day. So that's how we approach that.
And then as you reopen here again under these conditions, what steps are you taking to follow the guidelines that are out there?
Of course, limiting the amount of people that are in here is first and foremost. It is a much larger gallery. I'm not exactly sure the square footage, but we could safely fit about 40 people in here, and that's with about 6 feet distancing apart. So most of what we do is classes and workshops. It's usually one-on-one or less than 10 people. But for shows, we'll still continue to offer 4 different times, keep it limited at 40 people.
Tell us more about the art you will be showcasing there and what you've heard from the artists that you usually work with. They have been struggling. You,
yes,
I'm sure, have been struggling. This has had such an impact on the arts community in so many ways.
Yes, exactly. We reached out to a lot, of course, the artists. First thing when we were even thinking about doing an art show after this, just to feel what everybody felt like. Is it the right time? We want to be safe. We want to be sensitive. But yet everybody needs to move forward and to heal. And art is always an expression of that.
Yeah, give somebody a chance to express themselves and share the hope.
The response we got was just pretty overwhelming of, if we provide a safe environment, everybody was ready. all our shows are just so diverse. We show all mediums, all our artists. We pull in a young crowd. We pull in an older crowd. We're complimented a lot for just the diversity that we have in our gallery to begin with. Most of our events are free throughout the year. And our first show after this is Lockdown 2020. We changed our whole calendar around so it's more relevant to now. And so we did Lockdown 2020. That will feature probably around 30, maybe even 40 professional and emerging artists. And all the art featured will be made during lockdown, during quarantine. So it'll be really, really awesome to see all these unique, diverse voices, all the stuff made while we were shut in our studios. I'm curious to see everything that people will bring in. I'm sure the public will be very curious to see. We will be sneak peeking some pieces that will be in the Lockdown 2020 show just to get people excited for what's to come for that show. This RSVP, even though we're approaching it a little differently, and it is a benefit, it's probably the only paid event that we will do for the year. It was just to get some funding behind us for a gallery hanging system and to be able to continue to provide free shows for the rest of the year.
And where can people go online for more information? Where can they call?
Hetzelstudios.com. You can RSVP online. It's more in detail what those times are, what it's allotted for. And the phone number is 423-641-1308.
Beth, Becky, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Thanks, as always, to our producers, Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, Elena Nourabadi, Connor Brown, and Will Davis. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.